Podcasting from Music City, USA.
You're listening to Snacks for the Brain.
Hello, y'all. This is Scott Merrick with the Vanderbilt University Center for Science Outreach, bringing you episode number 44 of Snacks for the Brain. Today, we have some excellent pod-safe music from music.podshow.com. We're surfing out for eclectic music with titles that conjure up images of weather, and we're literally all over the globe today with indie tunes from, in order of appearance, South Africa, the United Kingdom, and our own Mississippi Delta. We have a tech tip for you from our friends at worldstart.com, courtesy of Dr. T at completelyfreesoftware.com, and this one is a quick and dirty rundown of that little icon in your task tray.
Assuming you're running Microsoft Windows...
that enables disconnecting a USB device. You always use that, yeah? Our interview for episode 44 is Nashville's News Channel 2 weather anchorman Jeff Ray, an alumnus of University School of Nashville and an outspoken and outreaching proponent of science education, especially that of the meteorological variety. Jeff will be participating in this year's Scientists in the Classroom interactive video conferencing program out of the Center for Science Outreach, and we couldn't be happier about that. Jeff Ray and I met up at the 21st Avenue Panera Bread, right across the street from Vanderbilt University. We each grabbed a Largo coffee and sat down to chat about weather. Not your sort of
nice day today, isn't it? Oh, well, yes, I suppose it is.
Chat, but rather a fascinating, to me at least, and I hope you'll find it so, talk about hurricanes, about the impending rush of Ernesto over the Florida Keys, and the factors that by every indication should have turned it vicious, but as history now tells us did not. Why? Because it's the weather! We moved on to talk about tornadoes and humidity and about just what makes Jeff Ray tick. I learned a lot in our half hour together, and I certainly hope you will too. The first song today is Rider on the Storm. You've been listening to it. We're going to finish it out and then get right into the interview with Jeff Ray. Thanks for downloading Snacks for the Brain. write Rider on the Storm by the South African electro artist Rudda, R-U-D-D-H-A. Hear more of his work at the Podsafe Music Network at music.podshow.com. Also, be sure to visit the show notes page at snacksforthebrain.blogspot.com for links to his music and additional resources relating to today's episode. Let's move into the bustling coffeehouse atmosphere of Panera Bread and have a cup of joe with Nashville News Channel 2's weather anchorman, Jeff Ray. Jeff? Scott? What do you think about that music?
It's freaky.
Anyway.
You know, you gotta think of hurricanes in the big pictures. Nothing but heat exchange engines. That's all they are. They're taking the heat buildup between Capricorn and Cancer across the equator, and they're moving that heat to the poles. Now, the heat that builds up in mass and on global scale is in the ocean. So what the hurricane's purpose is to take all the heat that builds up in that ocean, form a latent heat, drain it out, move it north, dissipate it. Wind energy, of course, takes a lot of it. Mostly it's just a huge mass of moisture going on.
So it's just like a tool of the earth.
Yeah, it is. It's a very efficient engine to take water vapor as the transport device, pull it off the ocean in the warm temperature, get it into the cooler atmosphere to the north, and then shed it out. Otherwise, the ocean would get so warm, literally, it would become inhabitable for the fish, you know, so they've got to constantly keep it balanced.
Wow.
So when you get into lulls in a hurricane season, it gets dangerous because the heat doesn't go away. I mean, the heat's always building up. Mm-hmm. It's just finding, trying to find an outlet. So here we go into this hurricane season where all the models show, sea surface temperatures, the driving force, getting up there, creeping up there, as they have been the trend here in the last decade as the earth is warm. It takes the right kind of atmosphere to make a hurricane, really, to get it going. Everything's got to be right. It has a lot to do with going on about 18,000 feet and higher. And if you don't have that in place, you're just simply not going to get a hurricane. It doesn't matter how warm the ocean temperature is. It's just not going to happen. Well, we've been waiting and waiting for things to kind of get right. And finally, it has a lot to do with what we call the Bermuda High, and it shifts off to the east a little bit further, and it opens up an avenue for these hurricanes that come up the Caribbean. So finally, just in the last 2 weeks, the weather pattern has shifted to allow it. It's been suppressing hurricane activity. Anything that's come up towards the Caribbean is just getting sheared apart from the easterlies. Well, now the easterlies aren't there, and here we go. We're in hurricane season. Starting late, but here we go. Now, meanwhile, the ocean temperature's getting higher and higher. Now, this time last year, the ocean temperatures were actually cooler at this time because they had already had 7 hurricanes go over the Caribbean and churn the water up.
The tool had done its work.
Yeah, it's been washing out the heat, right? Now this thing is going to climb up the north shore of Cuba. Typically, when it crosses the island, it not only slows down, it weakens. You know, it needs open water. And it's 50 mile per hour winds. It goes into Cuba, and it's probably going to get knocked down to somewhere about 35, maybe even lose tropical storm briefly, but they won't report that. It'll get over onto the water. Now it's going to cross the Florida Straits. Now it's going to go across not as a straight line, because if you went from a straight line from Cuba to the Keys, it's like 91 miles. But this one's going to kind of arc over across. So it turns out that it's going to be over open water about 200 miles. Go right over Dry Tortugas. Well, the temperature is 86 degrees. That's more typical of the shoreline of the Gulf Coast. Mm-hmm. It's not the typical temperature this time of year. So this thing is going to explode. This thing is just going to go crazy, and tomorrow morning around this time, everybody's going to be going, where did this hurricane come from? You know, we're telling everybody now, look, as soon as it clears the coast, this thing is going to go from a tropical storm to a hurricane to maybe even a Category 2 before it hits Florida. It's probably going to come right on shore at the Everglades. And it's all going to happen in this tiny little window, you know, which is the worst case scenario for any hurricane. I mean, think even with Katrina, I mean, they saw it come in 4 days.
Right.
You know? Now they're talking about the window being less than 24 hours.
And one road out of there.
Yeah. Basically, yeah. You know, coming out of the Keys. It's one road. And in a Category 2, you know, you take a direct hit from a Category 2, it's going to do some damage. You know, it depends how much forward motion it's got. So it's going to be interesting to see how the news plays it out, because they're going to quickly go to a panic mode, I suspect, you know, if the model plans out like it is. But it's always interesting as you study the weather, you know, it's like in any discipline, you tend to see it before the the main bell curve of awareness hits, right. You know, and you just know that tomorrow it's all about Ernesto and the panic and the evacuation and people just fleeing the scene. Because ever since Andrew hit Miami, those people are hypersensitive.
A little gun shy.
Oh my goodness. I mean, they really go into panic mode quickly. And they'll see this thing bearing on them and they have such a little opportunity. Because it's not when it hits shore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when it gets within about, well, it's hard to tell without it being at full strength, but let's say it hits a Category 2, those winds will extend out 110 miles. So almost by the time it really matures right over the center of Florida Straits, you get to a point where you can't evacuate anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Because the winds there in Miami, or actually to the south and over the Key West chain, Alvarado, and over to Key Largo.
It's totally exposed out there.
They're in hurricane winds, and you can't be out there trying to get in your car and your station wagon and evacuate. It's too late.
Yeah.
So, I mean, their window evacuation is very, very small. And they really need to be leaving now. And from what I understand, some people are. But a lot of people won't leave until they see it on the radar. They see it. And they go, oh my God, look, a hurricane. And then they'll get in their car and they'll leave. But by then, it'll almost be too late.
It's a recipe for disaster.
Well, that's what happens. That's what happens when you have a late maturing system. They tend to spin up really quick. And, you know, there's been a lot of wonderment over last year's season, even though the Atmos set up perfect for a great hurricane season. They still under forecasted almost everyone in its climb up and initial intensity.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like something else was going on that wasn't in the climatological database that they use to try to forecast intensity upgrade. You know, normally 24 hours, 36 hours, you see this thing go up, you know, a couple of categories even. These things were taking 8 hours, and all of a sudden they're jumping up to, you know, from a Category 1 to a Category 3.
So do you think for the remainder of this season there's a heightened danger since there hasn't been that?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we're now
leaching off of the heat from the oceans.
As soon as the pattern changed, we're now into the heart of what was always been forecasted to be above normal season.
Right.
It just delayed it, that's all. And
then they revised their models and said it was not going to be a big season, right?
Well, it's still above normal, even with the new numbers.
Oh, okay.
So not as great as the forecast early this season, and that just has to do with the window closing down in October. Mm-hmm. You know, if the weather pattern had changed just 2 weeks before it did, then we probably would have hit those numbers. But what we'll end up with is a very concentrated season in a short time span, I suspect, you know. So it's interesting.
Well, you know, I lived down in Miami for 5 or 6 years, and I think I only saw one tropical storm.
Mm. You missed Andrew.
A couple of decades ago.
Yeah, yeah, the time of the lull. Between the late 50s and all the way up to Andrew,
mm-hmm.
there was 20 years where, climatologically speaking, you get 5 hurricanes, 3 of them hit Florida.
Is that a little kind of a part of a big pattern?
Yeah, they pretty much attribute it to an oscillation that goes on the Atlantic Basin,
mm-hmm.
and the oscillation is decadal, which means it spans over like 2 decades, and it waxes and wanes, and basically, when it goes positive, which I believe means low pressure over the northern Atlantic, that means that we are now more in a track that develops the hurricanes just along the, or intensifies, and they'll develop off the coast of Africa, but will intensify them as they enter the Caribbean. And that pattern pretty much shifted into the mid-90s. And it will probably hold like this, probably for another decade still, you know. But of course, the wild card is ocean temperatures being a little bit warmer than they were 30 years ago in the last decadal cycle.
So you're talking about global warming here.
Yeah, yeah, we're seeing a footprint of that in ocean temperature. And though, as you know, I mean, so much debate about if this is a natural variation. My point was, well, in the 50s, during the maximum and the warm temperatures and the ideal climate for hurricanes, and indeed in the 50s it was very active, all the way up really into the 60s. It's a very active hurricane period there. You know, why weren't we getting coral bleaching then? You know, why weren't we seeing migration of aquatic species from warmer water? You know, I mean, We're seeing a lot of proxy evidence now that seems to indicate there's something going on now here in the double O's that wasn't going on in the early 60s, late 50s during the last hurricane maximum. And, you know, I mean, claim what you will, what's causing it, there's no doubt that it is different.
More interesting stuff from Jeff Rand in just a minute, but let's listen to a little wonderful, sweet instrumental from UK guitar wizard Jim Ronayne from music.podshow.com. Here it is. It's called Storm Over Glencoe.
Change the track a little bit and ask you, just for the benefit of the listeners, what about your track? How did you get into weather? How did you get into meteorology?
Oh, yeah.
What led you there?
I was in a tornado in Mount Clemens, Michigan. I was coming out of the first grade, going into second grade. It was during the summer.
Mm-hmm.
And living on an Air Force base, and a tornado hit. And it hit literally just on the other side of a small ridge. It's the line, the track was along the other side of a ridge. Wiped out a row of houses, including a classmate's of mine, and he was killed along with his mother. Nine people were killed in the Mount Clemens tornado, and ever since then, you know, having seen that tornado out of a window and being taken over there by my father right after it and seeing the destruction, you know, I mean, houses taken down to the foundation, to the concrete pad, really kind of, I guess what was hard to fathom at that age is that on the wake of that tornado, within an hour, it was almost a clear blue sky. That how that same sky could produce a tornado that rips things apart, and then just an hour later, it'd be just a blue, sunny day, you know? So I always was interested in the weather after that, and it just kind of took a long, slow, evolving path to get to meteorology. Because I really didn't even start till I hit 30. That was the first time I ever did weather on television. But I've been doing it since, so now here I am a year from 50, so I'm going into 20 years now of doing it.
So we're getting some tornado sounds here at Panera, by the way, that you may be hearing in the background.
Oh, really?
Some big mechanical sounds going on that sound tornado-ish. But I kind of like the feel of a live interview in a live place.
The coffee clatch.
It is the coffee clatch. Is there a relationship between hurricanes and tornadoes and their mechanism and their... purpose for being? Are tornadoes doing the same thing?
No, they're totally different animals, really. Hurricanes are massive heat exchange engines out in open water that happen to strike land. Land gets in their way, you know, otherwise they would just be, they'd be happy to stay out in the ocean. That's where they get their strength. Tornadoes are isolated events, much smaller scale. That are really produced by ideal atmospheres around a thunderstorm, an individual cell that what we call becomes a supercell from lack of imagination, I guess. But supercells will develop a tornado if everything is right. I mean, you've got to have quite the combination of factors to get a tornado. You have 1,000 thunderstorms develop over Nashville, say. And out of that 1,000, probably only 20 will go severe. And out of that 20, probably only 2 or 3 will produce a tornado. Maybe just one will produce a tornado of significance, something that is F3 or higher, actually will do a lot of damage once it hits ground. Most of the tornadoes, 98% of them, are little rope tornadoes, come down, last, you know, 15, 20 minutes and might knock down a barn, you know. Right. The winds aren't that strong. They're still dangerous, but in a smaller scale. Then you get an F3 or something higher, a wide damage path, stays on the ground for a period. You know, like the one that went through Gallatin, you know, that was a major tornado that came through there. And did a lot of damage, as
boy,
you saw.
Boy, I saw some of the damage in the photographs.
It's amazing. It's amazing what they do.
Well, and then what was the category of the one that came through Nashville several years ago?
That was a 3.
A 3?
Yeah, 3. Barely. But it was an urban enough area for it to do the damage that it did. And really, when you look at it, I mean, the bellwether for any tornado damage really isn't the money, it's the lives. Mm-hmm. You know, and there was only one fatality with the Nashville tornado. And with the Gallatin tornado, there were 8. So that's usually what we consider the measuring mark for what is a, you know, a horrible weather event and what is just, oh, you know, this is some bad weather. When people die, of course, it's it makes the coverage also much different.
Is there anything for Well, I do have another question. Why is it so humid in Nashville?
It's humid everywhere in the Southeast. No, this is no place different, believe me.
It's ugly out there today.
Well, it's, you know, we're close enough to the Gulf where we get our pull of moisture from the Gulf. But it's actually even more harsh heading into the Midwest, where the more of the continental climate, they don't change air masses as much, or they get kind of caught under high pressure, really, is what happens. And during the summer months, they're just as humid as us, but instead of being, you know, we get up to 95, they get up to 105.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's even more brutal than in other places than it is in Nashville, believe it or not. Of course, it's more humid along the Gulf, but it doesn't get as hot because normally you get a huge deck of clouds in the afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you rarely get full sunny days.
That's a pattern we don't get here. There's not a regular pattern here.
Yeah, and especially this summer, we've gotten several shots of some cool air have come in and swept the humidity out. That's not that usual.
Yeah.
I mean, in the summertime, you only get it maybe once or twice, and I think last time I counted, we've had 6 shots of it, which is really great. It's really great.
It has felt good a few days.
Yeah, for a few days, and then we're back to the typical weather. And by the time you get to the end of August, people are sick of it, you know, ready for something else to happen. We call it September.
You do a lot of outreach too, don't you? I noticed you had a meeting this morning with a fundraiser.
Yeah, for the tour. Yeah, I do a lot of stuff. It's you know, part of the gift that you get when being on television is a silly thing. You know, it's a silly way to earn a living. I do it because I love the weather and I like communicating about the weather. It's fun. But you think about it, I have this job where I stand in front of about the size audience that fills into the Titan Stadium, LB Field, every Sunday. And so I get, you know, stand in front of a camera and I talk about the weather. You know, only in America can that be called living. But one of the blessings of that is that you have a little bit of a pulpit. You've got a little bit of a little grease the wheel ability. So I'm able to lend my activity to things that I think are important. And, diabetes runs in my family all up and down the chain, so I've been involved with the American Diabetes Association and Tour de Cure, which is a bike race that they do every year. I've been the honorary chairman for that. And I do other things. So school outreach is probably the bigger thing for me as far as total time. So, you know, during the season, I probably end up talking to somewhere between 2 to 3 schools a week, you know, going and talking about weather. And which I love to do. It's the closest I'll ever be to being a rock star, you know. You walk into a bunch of third graders, you know, and they just think you're a big deal, and it's...
Oh, they do.
You know, and it's the joke's on them, but you don't tell them that, you know.
Well, hopefully you can increase their knowledge or wisdom or both when it comes to dealing with weather. And I'm hoping this fall, once we get our program together, we can extend your reach a little bit and maybe help with that time thing, because through the video conferencing program, you can see three classrooms in different parts of the country all at once.
Oh,
and only
great.
Have to go to one place to do it. So.
Yeah, I think that's what our former Fed chairman described as the increasing of the efficiency in the working model, right? We're more technology has made us more productive.
20 years or so ago, everybody was predicting the leisure society when we'd wonder what to do with our time.
Yeah.
And now we know. We fill it up with more work.
Yeah. Boy, that seems like, that's rich in irony now, isn't it?
Yeah, we're all leisurely.
Oh, it's so true. Well, thank you for joining us today.
Thanks, Scott.
And I'm going to do a little...
Hey, y'all, it's time for a tech tip tidbit.
Tech tip tidbit for you.
So if you work with a lot of different USB devices, you probably use the safely remove hardware icon quite a bit. Am I right? You know, you're supposed to safely remove a USB device by clicking on the icon in your taskbar and stopping the whole process instead of just unplugging it without any warning. So, what if you lost that icon? What are you supposed to do then? Well, if you've recently lost your safely remove hardware icon, there is one thing you can do to try to find it again. It may just be hidden, and you can change that with a couple quick clicks. Go to your taskbar and right-click on any open area. Choose Properties and make sure you're under the Taskbar tab. Look toward the bottom under the Notification area and uncheck the choice that says Hide Inactive Icons. Click OK when you're done. This will bring back several icons that you maybe haven't seen in a while. You can choose to have the safety icon shown all the time, or you can hide it again if you want, now that you know where to find it when you need it. Also, keep in mind that this icon doesn't always show up for every USB device you plug into your computer. If you are using items that are known as permanently connected devices, printer, webcam, etc., the icon may not show up when you plug them in. This icon tends only to show up when there's a chance of the data flow between the device and your computer being interrupted during your use, something such as a flash drive. So you can either keep it hidden, unhidden, or just look for it when you're using other types of devices. It'll be there when you need it, just like a trusty old friend.
This tech tip tidbit comes from WorldStar.com and comes to us by way of Dr. T in the CompletelyFreeSoftware.com weekly newsletter.
Hey, let's listen to some blues, y'all, from authentic Mississippi blues veteran Boo Boo Davis. This is Ice Storm. What I'm talking about.
What I'm talking about.
What I'm talking about.
What I'm talking about.
Oh, what a ice storm, y'all. I'm not a good man now. Hey, what a ice storm. Chamber, y'all, didn't have no leg of light. Mount fire, didn't have no leg of light. It was a high stone. Have not a new mission now. It was a high stone. Have not a new mission now. Laying on the ground, let me wide, y'all. But down on the ground, hear what a high stone. How that a judgment in now? Hey, what a high stone. How that a judgment in now? Cross there, y'all. Didn't have no left in life. Have no leg of light. A mouth fire. Didn't yard and have a leg of light. Here what a high stone. Have not a tumor in me now. Here what a high stone, y'all. Have not a tumor in me now.
Hell of ice stone. Hello!
It was a ice stone.
Hello!
It was a ice stone.
Hello!
It was a hell of ice stone.
Hello!
It was a hell of ice stone.
Hello!
It was a hell of ice stone.
Hello!
Down, mouth out and have no electric lights, clocks down, telephone poles were lame, all on the ground. Let me wide, y'all, but on the ground, there was an ice stone. There was an ice stone.
Alrighty, y'all, we've heard electronica, we've heard an instrumental acoustic guitar, and now we've heard some great blues from Boo Boo Davis. Bonus alert! I just can't leave you without a rock tune, this one from the Reverse Engineers, a trio of brothers from Tampa, Florida. The song? Well, what else? Weatherman! See you next show on Snacks for the Brain!
Snacks for the Brain is brought to you by the fine folks at the Vanderbilt Center for Science Outreach, connecting working research scientists with K-12 students worldwide. Check out the website at www.vanderbilt.edu/CSO.